Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Ruthie's Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Summer in London has ripe strawberries, green grass in the parks, and skies that are, at last, blue. The city fills up with visitors, many here for Wimbledon. Last July, I went to a dinner with people well known in the world of theater, politics, movies, art, and television. At around 10:30, the doorbell rang, and John McEnroe entered the room. Everyone stopped talking. Over the years, I've witnessed in the River Cafe the spellbinding effect an athlete can have. None of us can do what they do, and we all know it. There are many, many images of John McEnroe on the tennis court, but the one that I recall is not athletic, but artistic. It's a photograph of John carrying, in fact, almost cradling, a painting by Philip Guston, who was a close friend of my father and mother. It was moving to see a strong, powerful athlete I admired carrying something so fragile. Today, in New York City, John has walked across Central Park from his home, and in the fading autumn light, we will talk about the food we eat, the art we love, and the friendship we, a tennis player and a cook, have begun.
Ruthie, very nice intro. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. It'd be nice if you begin to read a recipe.
I do love Italian food, so
yeah?
I'm going to try to. Yeah, that's my favorite food.
Is
so.
It? Oh, good. Okay.
Penne alla amatriana
is
the dish that I'm going to read. 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 250 grams, 9 ounces of pancetta, 2 dried red chilies, get a little spice, 1 red onion, 2 tablespoons, 800 grams of tin plum tomatoes, 300 grams of penne, 100 grams of freshly grated pecorino.
Pecorino.
Okay. Heat the olive oil in a large frying pan. Add the pancetta and fry until it becomes crisp. Add the chilies, onion, and rosemary to the pan and sweat. It says sweat, okay?
Sweat. Do you know what that
term?
Means? Sweat. Well, it means that you don't want it to brown. You want it to soften.
Add the tomatoes, stir well. Simmer for 30 minutes until the sauce is very thick. Bring a large saucepan of salted water to the boil. Cook the penne until cooked but still firm, which is known in Italian as al dente. Drain the penne and add to the sauce. Mix well and serve with the pecorino. You know, I don't remember that much about my childhood, mainly because what's happened to me from 18 to now I'm 63 years old has been so incredible in a lot of ways that I'm sort of like, you know, I had a nice, okay upbringing. I had a commute an hour each way from Queens, New York, into the city to go to high school. Sports kept me, helped me get friendships because I was a bit of an introvert, shy kid. I know I'm not really now, but I was then. I don't have a lot of great memories of my childhood, but that doesn't mean it was bad.
Okay.
It means that there was a loving family, a mom who took care of me, God rest her soul, my dad as well. that always believed in me.
Did your mother cook?
My mother did cook. Here's the thing. She wouldn't allow us to leave the table till everything was eaten.
Did she grow up
She grew up during the Depression, so didn't have a whole lot. But she wasn't super poor, but she felt that we needed to finish what was on our plate.
And was there a lot?
And we had to have liver once a week or a month because we were Catholic, and we had to have fish, which I hated, and liver, which was even worse. Felt like I was going to throw up. Two younger brothers. But the good news was is that I didn't know that dessert was an option until I went to college.
Oh, I see.
Because my mom would always have a chocolate cake with vanilla. And she'd go, Charlie, you have to finish this. You're a kid. You're like, really? I have to finish this?
Do you think maybe it's because she spent all that time cooking it? Maybe she's, you have to finish your
chocolate
cake.
Have to finish your dessert.
You have to finish
So, you know, I was a bit, they used to have four sizes when I grew up. There was small, medium, husky, and large. I was husky. I was a bit husky.
I remember husky.
So it dawned on me when I went to college that, I could sort of eat whenever I want, and I don't have to eat what I don't want. Yeah.
So were they miserable meals around the table? Did you always dread having to sit down?
No, I didn't have miserable meals. They were great meals.
Yeah, great meals. Yeah. So, but the experience of having to, because you signed
I just, once a month, you know, or once a week, it was tough. We didn't get the type of fish and chips that you got in England, say. That would have been more bearable, heavily fried with a lot of ketchup.
Yeah, so did she work during the day? Or was
you know, she was a nurse, an operating room nurse. When I became probably around 12, I think she retired from that because she had, I had two younger brothers. We had three kids. My dad was a lawyer. So she sort of took care of us at home, and we didn't have anyone cooking for us except her.
It's hard work.
It is hard work. You know, I wish I had been more appreciative at the time. It's like, Mom, get the food.
Did you all do the dishes afterwards, do you think? Did you all have to do chores?
My mom was like a very clean house, so we didn't really have to do the dishes. I mean, we probably just stuck them in the sink, and we didn't have to make our bed.
She did that.
Which is sort of, maybe that's why I got spoiled so young. One of the reasons.
So meal times at the McEnroe house, they were fun. You talk?
Generally, it was a loud dinner table. You know, my parents are very loud. So, you know, it was definitely a shock going to London when I was 18 because people were very polite and, you had to be a certain way and beer was very hot and it was in a, you know, wood barrel or something. Like, what the hell is wrong with this?
Is that when you were playing, when you were 18?
No, first time I went to London was I was 18. So it was sort of these in 77. So that was like the punk sort of revolution, you know. So I was walking down the King's Road for the first. I'm like, oh my God, these people are crazy. But then I started realizing that they were sort of like we were both. They started calling me a punk for tennis. I'm like, wait a minute. I mean, have you seen the Sex Pistols? So I guess in tennis terms, I was sort of a punk. But compared to the real ones, I had a lot of work to do. But you know, some of what they were espousing was not all that different than what I was thinking, you know, sort of rebelling against the obvious that felt unfair.
I thought, you know, can I raise my hand and say you rebelled against what was unfair?
That's what I believe.
On your side.
That's what I'll tell them.
You were.
But I'll admit I went over the line on a couple of occasions. Maybe a couple hundred. But at the same time, it was because I believed that our sport should be viewed differently than it was and even is now. You know, this, you know, upper class have to behave a certain way. I think that's a bunch of baloney. I never believed that. I wanted to be thought of as the same way that they look at what you call football. Well, you're American also, but you've been there since in the 70s, I believe. But we call soccer, they call football. Yeah. I thought, you know, in the rugby field, they're not saying, hello, how are you out there? And our football field or whatever sport it is. So that's always been an uphill battle. So I take pride in trying to change the sport, what I believe was for the better. But some people may differ with that.
And you refused to play in South Africa, didn't you?
Thank you for saying that. That was probably the proudest decision I ever made, you know.
And I think I just remember being with our friends and saying, this kid, you know, in Wimbledon is talking about what's not right, but his political values, his social values are so Correct. And there weren't many players who were doing that. Did you ever play? Did you ever go to South Africa?
You know, I did only when they ended apartheid. And I believe that the reason that I ended up meeting Nelson Mandela on my first trip, where he said, I wish I would have given $1 million if we had a tape of this. But he said to me when I walked in his house that he lived in, "It's an honor to meet you." And I'm like, he's not talking to me, is he? Because that's about what I was going to say to him.
Yeah.
And he was the most beautiful man I ever met. Just his hand. It felt like I was shaking hands with an angel. There was this feeling that I can't explain. Mm. I brought a racket. I gave him the racket that I used at Wimbledon, the old wooden racket. I said, "This is for you." And he held it and he said to me, "I listened to your match when you played Bjorn in 1980, and I I realized that he was saying that he was listening to me while he was at Robben's Island, where he spent 27 years of his life, and I'm sitting there complaining about a goddamn line call, like this is the world's coming to an end. And this guy didn't have a bone of bitterness, it felt like, in his body. How in God's name could anyone ever have that? So, you know, I really felt like he was one of the most beautiful people in history.
He said it was an honor to meet you, and then he said that he'd listened to you at Wimbledon. Maybe that was the connection, you know, that he was also saying, you know,
well,
that was fair.
Yeah, like that. I just could picture that. And then me going, oh, my God.
Do you think he ever played tennis?
From the way he was swinging the racket, I believe he did play.
He did, really. That you did play.
I thought he played. I can't swear to that. It looked like he knew how to play.
Yeah. My brother told me that he was once in Hollywood. My brother is in the movie. He said that he was in Hollywood and Mandela was there. And there was this huge audience. And Spielberg was there. And Geffen was there. And Tom Hanks. Every movie star, Harrison Ford, was there. And then Nelson Mandela was talking. And he just looked out and he just stopped. And he came down to the audience. He walked through to the one important person in the room, and it was Muhammad Ali, you know? And that's going back again to the athlete, to the person who had dignity, the person who, and that's what we, you know.
Well, I met Ali a few times, and he had a pretty profound effect too, but he was already suffering from
the
effects of Parkinson's, and it was tough to see this, you know, incredible human being. And, you know, how many athletes do you know they would give up 3 years of their prime and refuse to fight because they're on principle? So I think pretty much nobody, honestly.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When did you start playing tennis?
I was 8 years old.
Did your tennis coach think about what you should be eating? No.
Never once mentioned it. You know, I ate cereal that had tons of sugar.
Yeah.
I'd have a bacon sandwich for breakfast.
Yeah.
Cinnamon toast with butter and cinnamon on it. Yeah. My mother never said a word.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, just eat.
When you're a kid? Yeah. I mean, I just totally disagree. I see these kids at my academy and they've got these portions. I'm like, you're 12. Yeah. Go burn it, run around a little.
What about when they're sitting there and they're drinking the water and sweating? Would you ever think of having anything at all to eat? Or no, you wouldn't.
But you mean during the match?
Yeah, you'd have some nuts or anything like that. No, nothing.
I mean, bananas, you know, something like
that. That board match went on for how long?
4 hours.
Were you hungry at all?
Yeah.
You were hungry.
But I mean, also, you're so jacked up. Mm. I think if people ever saw me play, they could probably agree that they saw a lot of energy being thrown out. You're actually running a lot, so it's not a good thing to have a big steak an hour or two before you play. I mean, I remember Bjorn Borg, my buddy, would have a steak 2 hours before every match. And it didn't affect him at all. He was fine. Yeah. He was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, athletes they saw on a court. Andy Murray, I saw him eating a turkey sandwich about a half hour before he played. He goes, that doesn't affect me at all.
Yeah.
Before he played Wimbledon or something, or US Open. You can eat that, right? Oh, no, it doesn't bother me. Some people have different metabolisms. Yeah. I couldn't do that. Some people are even worse. Yeah. You know, they'll go the whole day and not eat
at all. Yeah.
But, you know, then that's why, could be why they're a little more irritable.
Maybe.
I felt like I didn't digest as quickly, needed a little bit more time.
So you wake up in the morning.
Not a big breakfast. Depending on when I played. I would have a bigger meal probably 3 hours before I played.
That would be
something like chicken, some type of pasta, some type of blandish potato, some type of vegetable.
Mm.
Maybe possibly a soup. Not really too often.
So you would eat 3 hours before, then have a two-hour break before you actually were on the court.
2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Later matches was preferable because I don't really like breakfast that much.
Yeah.
And I don't like to have to eat early. But sometimes you have to do it. You know, so it's... in my day, there was more emphasis on carbs.
I was going to ask you if it's changed over the...
It's changed quite a bit.
What year did you start?
I started in 77.
And so what was nutrition like? I asked this to Beckham the other day about when did that feeling of, you know, what we ate affect our health?
The early to mid-80s, there was more talk about what would be most beneficial. You know, when you're 18, I think you can pretty much run through anything.
Mm.
And the first couple of years after that, you're burning so many calories, it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or so you thought, because it's sort of mind over matter. But I think it's people are more aware of it than ever. I think they've gone a little bit too far the other way.
Do you?
In my opinion,
but
I think they just, you know, every little, you know, they regulate everything, and they've got to do it at such a time and eat such an amount. And I think it's such a bunch of BS, personally.
Mm. And are you going to come back to Wimbledon this summer? You will be back.
You know, I've been there probably 77, I'd say 43 of the last 45 years.
Yeah.
When my first child was born, I missed one. The pandemic was canceled. But pretty much every one, I've been there either as a player or as a commentator.
Yeah.
So it's sort of come full circle, because when they wanted to get rid of me for a while and throw me out, now all of a sudden, you know, I'm working for BBC of all places, and they're telling me to do exactly what I want.
Yeah.
You know, so I find that to be very commendable, I must say, because, you know, there's sort of, we thought, like, hey, they're a bunch of stuffed shirts, the way they talk and the way they deal with the event. But when they hired me, they were like, look, we want something different. Mm-hmm. You know, we want you to be you. And I think that's the key to hopefully my success, if people want to call it that, is because I recognize that you need to be yourself.
Obviously for you, and I can't imagine what it's like being booed on a court. I can't imagine who would do that.
Plenty of people did.
I know, and I think that you've come.
How did you feel when you got booed, when you walked on the court for the 1980 and 81 Wimbledon final against Borg? Didn't feel that great, I could always do what Trump did, which was... I sat next to him once, and we were at a hockey game. Coincidence that we were sitting next to each other. and they would introduce quote unquote celebrities, and they, you know, I'm hoping like, oh, they don't boo, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, John McEnroe, 3-time Wimbledon champ. You know, luckily, I'm a New Yorker. I've been a New Yorker my whole life. Nice applause. Yeah. A half hour later. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, entrepreneur, real estate icon, and apprentice. This is 2 weeks, 2 years before he ran.
2 years.
2 years before 14. He ran.
Yeah.
15,000 of the 17,000 people booed him.
They did. They did.
He sat down and he looked at me and he says, John, they still love me. And I thought, hilarious. For the first time, I thought, maybe he could be a politician.
He did. He just sees
and
it.
Of all things, the guy became the president of the United States.
Yeah, but he's not going to be again, I don't think.
Oh, well, you know, that's a, you would have thought he would have actually, like, said, oh, my God, how in God's name did I do this? We've been around for about 250 years. I would say that was probably the craziest thing that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had civil wars.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, never ran for anything in his life. Now, see, you can't do something with Trump, though, because he doesn't, you know, he eats terrible food.
Yeah.
Right?
He's obese.
He doesn't sleep, and he never works out.
Yeah.
And he's, you know something? The guy's got more energy than I've ever seen anywhere in my entire life.
Yeah, there you go.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird.
Are you an emotional eater? When you would lose a game, would you kind of not want
Not really.
Nothing like that? Or when you
That would be alcohol.
Oh, would you?
Or other things.
But not food.
I mean, food might, I mean, it's not like I, you know, go in and eat a bag of, you know, potato chips because I was past
them. Yeah. What's your plan? You don't go out. You don't party. You don't go out in the evening.
I was not able to do much in the way of partying during Wimbledon, of all things. You'd hate to sort of blame it on
does
that.
Does anybody do it?
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
I mean, I think that in the older days, a few of us tried to do it a little bit, but not, you know, you'd be a fool to do it at Wimbledon. You could do it at a period of time where you're not, you know, it's an exhibition or a smaller event or it's not much on the line.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to do it then to me is sort of like you're not taking it seriously enough. Sometimes, you know, you may not want to be particularly social if you're more wound up maybe before or close to a match, especially me.
I'm sad I missed you in London because it was crazy the last time you were there and I was here. Do you remember you were just arriving?
I came over for an event called the Laver Cup. Which is a team tennis event where Roger Federer ended up retiring.
Oh,
so it was a big deal for the sport.
Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel?
I felt that it was a beautiful night and moment. Incredible. Yeah. We also won as a team for the first time, which was even more incredible. No offense to Roger. And so the weekend of the week I was there turned out to be awesome.
Do you ever go to your friends? Because it's very international tennis. You're talking about playing with Borg and playing Federer. Do you go to their house? Have you been to Switzerland to Federer's house?
Never.
Do you get a fondue, do you think?
That damn guy won't invite me.
He won't. Okay, maybe so. Maybe you get him.
Bjorn's house I've been at.
What was that like?
You know, it's met, you know, the Swedes. You know, their great spot he had up in the on the water and loves to entertain. Mm. You know, one of the best friends you could ever have. Mm. Never eats much.
He doesn't eat.
Not a big eater.
Oh.
I don't know how. The guy never has been tired in his life.
Yeah.
Phenomenal athlete. I don't know. It's constitution, you know, whatever it is, it's him. Because he eats because he has to eat. I eat because I like to eat.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
There's the difference.
What about your kids? So having 6 kids, that's a kind of food responsibility.
It is.
Did you take that on in terms of being
I took
parent?
It on, but sometimes I think, you know, we should have just let it go and let them do what they want, pretty much. Let them learn on their own. I mean, you could recommend stuff. But if you sort of, no, that's not good, the dessert, because you're putting on, you know, girls are, you know, I have 4 girls and 2 boys. Every human being is different. Mm. All my kids are different, so you got to sort of know how to treat them. My son, one of my sons, he would eat so slowly. Mm. Everyone would be finished at the table. He'd still be cutting the salad. Sean, eat your goddamn salad. You know, and he'd sit there. Absolutely perfect body, though. I don't know why he, you know, he chewed everything 20 times. So the way I never said that.
Would you all sit down to dinner when you had the kids, the second family?
Mm-hmm.
You had dinner every night together, and somebody would.
They called me Larry the Lecturer.
Oh, really?
Is what I became known as, because I try to give them a little bit of life's lesson, and they, God, here he goes again.
About food, about life.
About anything. Sometimes it was food, sometimes it was about tennis, sometimes it was about life, sometimes it was about schoolwork, sometimes it was about nothing in particular. And then I started pontificating, and that rubbed them the wrong way. And sometimes I overdid it, and then I dig in, and they go, Dad, everyone disagrees with you at the table. There's seven to one, including Patty. Yeah. And I go, I'm still right.
Yeah. Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I love Italian food.
Have you ever lived in Italy?
I've never lived there. I've been there, you know, probably 50 to 75 times.
Really?
Yeah, playing, you know. But
yeah. Where did you go? All over?
Oh, every city you can imagine.
Yeah. Okay.
The first rock and roll tour that I ever participated in as a band, allegedly, I was the most traveled, unsigned band in history.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that a fact?
I would bet money on that. But we did a 2-week tour of Italy in the summer of 1994.
94. So how old would you have been?
I was 35.
Yeah.
I had stopped playing.
How did you segue from an athlete?
Well, I was more of a sort of a passion and a, I don't want to say hobby, but something that was trying to sort of find that, find out where I was headed. Because, you know, when you stop playing, it's not always on the terms you want. I was going through a divorce at the time, at the end of my career, which I didn't anticipate. I had three kids. So I was, you know, then the next couple of years, you're going through it. It's not fun. So I needed a little bit of levity. And so I was able to start to do something that I love to do. It made me appreciate my friends who did it for a living more.
Yeah.
But it was a fun trip, I must say.
And why Italy?
My agent at the time was Italian, and so he sort of set this whole thing up. We played where Frank Sinatra played. I forgot, Forte di Marmo.
Yeah, Forte di Marmo, yeah.
But we played some nice locales. We didn't knock them dead. We didn't get to eat the food that, you know, you're normally able to get pretty easily just because of scheduling and stuff. But, I mean, you can stop by a highway, which is a lot better than the highways
like
in the States.
Little, what are they called? They're called the Ajip.
Exactly.
Those little places.
You get some pretty good pasta.
Yeah, and you get pasta, you get those little thin sandwiches that they fry. When you segued from that photograph that I described, which I can imagine in my head of you carrying the painting, how do you segue from music to art, from tennis to
Well,
art
I always
to
loved
music.
Art because I relate to artists big time because they're as close to tennis players as almost anyone else because they're sort of on their own island. They've got to represent. They go to a gallery opening. People could be there and go, this sucks. You know, and the person could be
well,
right
that's what
there.
Happened and to Guston, didn't it?
Well, yeah, they couldn't. He couldn't give those paintings
yeah,
away.
Yeah.
He got so frustrated with the art world that he sort of walked away from it. So it's like sort of like if I walked into the center court of Wimbledon and, you know, I lose 6-0, you know, and I'm down 2-0 and people are booing and you feel like, you know, you want to hide. It's the worst feeling in the world. So I think it takes guts to put yourself in a position. There's a great reward if it goes well, but there's also a definite downside. So it takes, I think it takes emotional strength to do that. And so I think it's the same as for an artist or like a comedian that does stand-up. You know, I've seen many a comedians bomb. And I will never criticize a player on a court if I see them giving 100% and they're laying an egg. That's not what I have a problem with. I have a problem with the people that go out in the court and don't try and give their best. That's the part I have a problem with, because you've been put in this position where you could do something that would be truly memorable. At a, you know, a truly memorable site, say at Wimbledon or the US Open, you don't want to go out there and half-ass it. So that's why I've always related. I always loved Guston. He was one of my favorite artists. I'm not sure why that started. I loved, like, I think because they're so political.
Yeah.
All through his career, you know, in his, even when he was in his 20s, not his 20s, in the 20s and 30s, he was painting hooded figures and, you know, Klan people. Yeah. Railing against that, and then he went through different periods, which I love to see artists doing different things. And then he went almost, you know, abstract expressionist. You know, you're like, that's a huge change. And then back to these like cartoonish figures, which I thought were incredible. So I just thought this guy just had a, you know, that would be like the type of artist that I, if I was an artist, I'd be trying to emulate, you know, so.
And he suffered, he really was so, and when you were talking about, you know, saying somebody is just criticizing them in such a damaging way, you know, Hilton Kramer of the New York Times, when Guston had his first show at Marlborough and he showed the hooded figures and he showed the Klan, just wrote on the front page of the New York Times art section, you know, this guy should give up and go home. And, you know, he got on a boat to Rome. As I said, he was a friend of my father's, who was also very political. And it was so damaging, you know, and it was so cruel and it was fearful.
I find it, you know, difficult to respect these. I mean, I respect someone who gives some constructive criticism or who would admit, I don't get this, and I'm not sure why this person did it, but I've got to sort of let this, let me digest this. Or some half-ass that goes on, you know, some tennis guy, you know, who writes tennis, who did make it because he wasn't good enough, and then he's going to sit there and criticize me. I go, you better know what you're talking about before you start laying it out. Some people that went around the tennis circuit for a handful of years, I respected. I respected their opinion. I would, you know, take to heart what they would say. At least I give it, you know, the legitimacy it deserved. A lot of other people would come in that show up 1 or 2 weeks a year because they were local beat writers for the hockey teams or basketball, and they'd roll in when we went to Philly or these other places. And they'd start, you know, lambasting the tennis players. And then I was like, you don't know a damn thing about what we're doing. And it was frustrating. And it's hard to respect that. So I could certainly see where a guy who, you know, put his heart and soul into something, you know, either way, like in my case, I was lucky because even I didn't like it, but sometimes negative attention can still, people still want you, at, you know, they'll offer you money to come because they think that, you know, a car crash. If you're an artist and someone completely shits on you and, you know, you don't sell anything, you're not making any money. So you could, you know, head down a really bad path. And I think a lot of artists have done that, as well as comedians. The upside is if you're able to stick with it and believe it, that, you know, the turnaround could be all the more sweet. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to happen that often with artists that are alive. And nowadays, to me, the most successful artists, at least financially, they're like businessmen. They're not even like, you know, the best artists to me anymore. They're just the smart, they're extremely smart people. And they manipulate the system in a brilliant way. I mean, I must say. And that's part of what I like about sports, ultimately, because you can't really do that in sports. I mean, ultimately, you got to go out there. You can talk all you want, but, you know, you get on the court or you got to step up. So that part I like, that ultimately the best will, the cream will rise to the top.
Yeah. I think that, you know, your honesty and your, you know, what you say about whether it's, you know, the world or Trump or the booing or the art or the solitariness, it is a solitary thing, isn't it? Play, you know, being an artist in your studio.
Very solitary, playing, especially our sport.
And you know. And your sport.
That's why I love doubles.
Musician, doubles.
And I also love playing for my country because you're with the team for that brief period of time.
And I think you, you know, as I said, from the very beginning, we were on your side. We thought you were, you know, your anger was fine. Your unfairness was respected. Your politics, you know, your politics were amazing. Are. And I think as a model, that's what counts, you know, and as a player. And I think you're
Tell me more.
I think you're really nice. I think you're nice to walk over across the park. I think you are. So if we think that food, you're going to have food which makes you feel healthier or food which makes you feel better performance, you could have food that pleases your mother because you've eaten it. You could have food that you want your children to eat. Food can be all that, but can also be comfort. If you needed comfort, what food would you reach for?
Big bowl of ice cream.
Ice cream? I'm sure you're going to say
I love
pasta.
Ice cream.
I do too.
What I love
flavor?
Ice cream.
What flavor?
Cookies and cream, coffee, you know, mixture of things.
Do you always keep it in the house? So if you
yeah,
need it,
I do, but that's not, you know, we shouldn't do that.
That's okay.
You know, I love a beer and pretzels late at night. That's comforting.
Yeah. Is there a food that reminds you of your childhood?
Pancakes. To some degree.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
The River Cafe Lookbook is now available in bookshops and online. It has over 100 recipes beautifully illustrated with photographs from the renowned photographer Matthew Donaldson. The book has 50 delicious and easy-to-prepare recipes, including a host of River Cafe classics that have been specially adapted for new cooks. The River Cafe Lookbook, recipes for cooks of all ages. Ruthie's Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.